I've been toying with an idea to randomly drop the soundtrack into this podcast episode. Just at random times. Just the same way that it drops into the movie bombastically and intensely in the weirdest moments sometimes. I feel like I need to do that with this show to really underline the movie we're talking about.
I would love that. You're going to ask me a question about this later, and that's the takeaway I want. I want that to be my life.
See, the thing is, you love that, and I love that, but I don't really know how much the listeners are going to love that. So fair. This is either going to be one of my most popular episodes or one of my least popular.
Right,
you
okay.
will see. There's no in between. Welcome to Wherever You Are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada. You are listening to episode 325 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie-loving podcast of thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. We are back, folks. Vacation is over. The suitcase is unpacked. The sleep schedule is sort of back to Eastern Standard Time. We're even going to the movies again. I had a great time on my grand adventure. Go check my Instagram feed if you want a taste of something European. But I'm happy to be returning to my routines, walking around my neighborhood again, sitting in my coffee shop, and yes, going to my movie theater. Just in time, too. There's a lot of exciting titles that are here and a lot more that are coming, a lot that are worth discussing, so why don't we get started? My guest today is a lot of fun to talk to, and you may have heard us dig into two very different movies in the past when we talked about Pixar's Turning Red and then Promising Young Woman. I'm very excited to have her back. Ruby Dillon is here. How are you, Ruby?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
My
for a very different movie again.
we're running the gamut, you know? We're going to get you on for one of every genre as we go. We'll get some light, fluffy rom-com next, some horror. It'll be great. We'll do the tour. Nice little, like, flight of movies, if you will. On episode 325, we're not going to do Know Your Enemy. We will learn more about Ruby the next time she shows up, but we're trying to record and publish on the fly, so we are going to jump straight into the new slang, which is exciting because the new slang this week is Challengers. Challengers is directed by Luca Guadagnino. It's written by Justin Koretzkis. Did I pronounce that right? Looks right. It stars Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Faist. Challengers is the story of Tashi, Art, and Patrick. Patrick is a tennis pro trying to win an elusive fourth leg of a Grand Slam and trying to shake a run of bad luck. To do that, his manager, coach, and wife, Tashi, enters him as a wild card into a low-level challenger tournament ahead of the US Open. The decision works well until Patrick makes the final, where he faces off against Art. So who's Art? Well, Art and Patrick go way back, way, way, way back. They grew up together, started competing as junior tennis players together, they went to school together, and they even met Tashi together at the same party. For years, the three of them were tangled in a knot of friendship, relationship, and sportsmanship until one fateful day, when everything brutally unravels. Their paths continue to cross through the years, and by the time this challenger final arrives, that knot is good and tangled once again, making us wonder who is going to come out on top. Ask around, and you will hear challengers described with several descriptors, including the fact that it is a sexy film. I'm not here to argue with that one bit. However, when I think about it, it's an interesting description. You see, for how gorgeous the film is, for how beautiful and sexy its stars are, it's a film that doesn't actually have a lot of sex. So pop quiz, hotshot, how does a movie play out this sexy without showing very much in the way of sex?
I was also surprised by that, I guess, that moniker. I would say that what really works is that it's obviously beautiful people.
Oh, yeah.
Beautifully filmed. But then also there's this like beautiful tension between this, it's just a limited amount of people on the screen, and it's just their faces and their bodies, which makes it really more intimate than I think if they broadened it out, if they like zoomed out a little bit, and that we're focusing on these three so intently and over time, it feels almost like voyeuristic. looking in on these three, catching up with them every once in a while. I've seen things on HBO that are much more explicit than this. And walking into it, I was shocked to see that it was like PG-13 or 14, whatever it is. They had to be 14 to see it. Because the response online was just blowing me away by like how sexy it was. But not to say it's not, it's just different than what I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because my answer to my own question was also the tension. I'm not really what I'd call a tennis fan. I've seen tennis and it's good because in this movie there's actually quite a bit of tennis. Tennis as a sport is a lot of like a flurry of action and then a lot of kind of build up to it again. It's like football, only more brisk, you know? It's all about that kind of who can hold momentum, who can carry momentum, who can steal momentum, how long can they, those kinds of things. And that's very much what this movie does, but with these three intertwined lives, like who's, you know, to steal the metaphor, who's holding serve at any moment in this movie? Like it's Tashi a lot. Tashi seems to be holding serve an awful lot of this movie, and rightfully so, because Zendaya just plays the heck out of this character. But there's times where Art seems to be holding serve. There's times where Patrick seems to be holding serve. And it's like, how long are they going to do that and keep it going? We haven't really talked about this movie besides the fact that we were both excited to talk about this movie. What did you think of Challengers?
I thought it was just such fun. I think I was expecting something else walking into it. Something a little bit heavier than what it ended up being. But it flies by. It is so fast. It's so full of energy. And it is mesmerizing to watch. Like the performances are good. The music, I'm sure we'll talk about later, is fantastic. It's everyone was bopping in their seats.
Right.
The camera work is really inventive and like you're really on the edge of your seat, which again, tennis is an amazing sport. There's so many stars coming out of it, but I've never been on the edge of my seat watching an actual tennis match. And people were leaning forward
in
the theater to get closer to the action. I was just really blown away by what a good time I had watching this movie.
Yeah, I had a great time as well. I did feel it was a little bit long. Like this movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes. And there's a perfect 2 hour movie in here.
Sure.
And it's like, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes because they really want to go through the scope of the lives of these three people. There's times where we spend a great deal with kind of two of them at a time. We don't spend a ton with, I think there's, what is there, one scene or two scenes where it's the three of them together?
Yeah.
There's not very, it doesn't happen very often. It's usually in pairs, which is interesting because it's tennis. but they're very seldom alone and they're very seldom all three together. So I did want kind of a little bit more tightening of the screws there, but that's a minor detail because the pace of it is beautiful. The imagery is beautiful. We've already talked about how this is a sexy, sexy movie. It gives all three of them, I think it gives all three of them their due and kind of really puts these three people in really interesting places for this interesting little love triangle that they are living for for several years of their lives.
I was oftentimes thinking I understood each individual character's motivations for what they were doing. And then when they were interacting with other people in different ways, I wasn't certain anymore. So I liked that no one was really a good person or the best person in this. They didn't have to be for me to still be engaged and want to watch. I wasn't really rooting for any of them through this whole movie, whether it was like in the love triangle or in tennis. Like I was just really engaged with all three of them. One, I guess, nitpicky thing for me would have been, I wish they were all a little bit meaner.
okay.
it's amazing. It works really well. And I think the way that they played their characters, it's a little bit more ambiguous, which is awesome for the way the movie pans out.
Sure.
but I feel like there's a lot of, we talked about, I guess before, discourse around this movie. A lot of people are really excited about it and talking about it. And the people have villains. Like, they have chosen who their villain is in this trio. And I don't know if anyone is really a villain. No one's a hero, but no one's really a villain.
No, I don't. Yeah. Like, if somebody were to ask me that, like, I don't think there's somebody in this who really makes a mess of the whole thing. Like, I think it's just, I think this situation, the situation itself is the villain. You know, the fact that these two guys met this one girl at the same party, and she, you know, when she went to call on them, in that wonderful scene where she goes and knocks on their hotel room door, she knocks, you know, she knocks on both their door. Like, they're in the same room. So it's not like she chose one and then the other was jilted. It's like she inserted herself into both of their lives, knowing that they were friends. And that was always going to be the dynamic, was they were always going to have somebody else around, right?
Yeah. The other fourth, I would say, like, there's, we're focusing on the three, and it sometimes feels like the fourth thing in this relationship is just tennis itself.
Yeah.
It's like a looming, almost like figure in the entirety of their relationship together.
It's the catalyst for everything that happens in this movie. Like, it's the most bonkers thing that, while it's not really a sports movie, it's very much a sports movie, because every major decision that affects these three people, the catalyst is something that happened in tennis. It's one of them playing, it's one of them beating the other, it's one of them losing, one of them needing coaching, you name it. It always, every single big decision, whether somebody gets together, whether somebody does not get together, whether somebody leaves somebody for the other, tennis was the reason. It was very seldom actually love. It was, you know, like, not, and not in the tennis term, but like affection or relationships. It was always, you know, this person beat that person, this person got hurt, this person's not winning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's wild that for a movie that's not really about tennis, it's actually very much about tennis.
Yeah.
And which should not work, because let me be clear, I do not really care about tennis. I have no idea, like, who the best players in the world are right now. You know, I know my Serena from my Venus, and you know, that's about as far as it goes. And yet, you know, this movie, like the best sports movies that are not actually about sports, this movie, while it is about tennis, is not actually about tennis.
Yeah. And I think I feel like the category, like the sports movie, is always something that's like a comfort watch. Mm-hmm. You know the basics of where it's going to go. There's going to be some sort of big game. There's going to be a winner, a loser. And I feel like this might fit in that genre in some way, because it is a tennis movie. But it is not what I would typically expect from a sports genre movie. It fits so many. It wears so many hats.
It does. It does.
Which is, I think, makes it really much more interesting. And again, why it's different than what I was expecting walking into the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's to its benefit. Let us spend time with each of these three people. I want to start with Art. That's Mike Feist. I said Feist in the intro, Mike Feist. People might remember him if they saw the remake of West Side Story. He played Riff. He's still kind of a newish face. So Art is kind of the first domino to fall, because he's the first character we get introduced to. We know that he's this really incredible player. He's won several championships, but he's just had this one elusive part of his tour, like a lot of great tennis players do. Art seems to be the one who is always reacting to everything else. Like, if there's one interesting thing about Art, I mean, because Art's cool, Art's handsome, Art's fun to be around. But the thing about Art is he always seems to be the person that Tashi and Patrick, their decisions seem to affect Art. Art doesn't have a whole lot of agency among, like, in his own life.
Right. And I feel like some of the agency that he does choose to act on almost sets this entire relationship dynamic into motion.
Yeah.
Without giving away anything, there's, I guess, a couple of conversations that he has that you're really like, wait, is Art a good guy? Which I, again, like, it really was interesting, because he is someone who is happy to do things on behalf, like follow orders, be the fan, kind of fall in line.
Yeah.
And it's like very rare that you see him use his own agency. But when he does, it's really, really interesting because you're like, well, why is he choosing now?
Why now? Yeah. Yeah. You've been docile and you've been almost, it's funny, almost submissive the whole movie. Hmm. And then in the final act, without giving too much away, we will have a spoiler section later on in this conversation, but without giving too much away, Art finally kind of has a very frank conversation with Tashi, and you're like, where has this been for 10 or 15 years? Yeah. Why are you having this moment now?
And I think it's interesting because Tashi uses this line several times, like, well, what do you want?
Yeah.
Like, she asks that very clearly to both of these characters. And it's interesting how each of them responds. Like, he finally does at one point get to say exactly what he wants, but then you're kind of at the edge of your seat because you don't know how someone else is going to respond to him. Tasha's going to respond to him actually saying what he wants, because for the most part she's been driving that.
which is wild, because like when they first met, they were both on the upswing, and Tashi probably far ahead of him, mm-hmm. on that career arc. And then because of her injury, now she's, it's funny because she's technically sitting shotgun in his career as his manager and his coach. But at the same time, like, she's very much in the driver's seat in terms of where he goes, what he does, how he gets there, because mm-hmm. without her, he seems like he'd be lost. That was something I actually found really fascinating about Art, is here's a guy who I really like what he represents, because here's a guy who is handsome, he's talented, he has money, he's successful to a reasonable extent, mm-hmm. and yet he seems inside like he's a puddle of goo. You know, here's a guy who very much has anything anybody would want in life, and yet he's still not enough, like, for his own reflection. Yeah. That I think is a fascinating type of character and a fascinating type of person.
It's really funny because, like, you would think because he is like that soft-centered person that you'd be able to, or he'd be a character that gets walked all over, but it doesn't, for me, feel like that. Like, he is an active participant because he's going along with it. Yes. Yeah. For the most part, but, he has his reasons for doing what he's doing. He has his own goals, but they kind of form around whoever he's latched on to almost. Yeah. When he's with Patrick, his goals, his wants, his desires are kind of what Patrick wants. And when he's with Tashi, they're what she wants.
Yeah.
But he is, again, like the actor who's going to make these things happen
for these people. Again, which you wouldn't expect for a good-looking, rich white dude, you know? It's not usually the way it goes. It's like, dude, you have so much of the world on your plate. Why aren't you, you know, more in control of this? It's wild to see. I think Feist does a great job of it. I did not know what to expect coming into this from him, because I'd only seen him play the one role, and it was a very, very restrictive kind of role. But I'm definitely interested to see what else he does going forward. Tashi, of course, is, I think, the beating heart of this movie. Mm-hmm. We meet her early in her career when she's on very, very much on the ascent. Like, they find her at this party that's being thrown for her, and she's very much at, like, the center of this orbit. Like, you kind of feel the every room she goes into, the universe swirls around her. Mm-hmm. Including when she walks into that hotel room where they're both, you know, hanging out like college freshmen and in this messy, messy room. And she very much takes control of that situation. What did we think of Zendaya in this movie as Tashi?
I thought she was really great. And for me, Tashi feels a little bit like a tragic figure because, like you said, she's on this ascent. She knows exactly what she wants. And then it all kind of, like, is outside of her control. I guess her hands are tied. And she has to use an instrument or an actor to be able to achieve the things she wants to achieve. And I think she did just such a great job of being a little bit hands off with the kind of control she wielded, because she made, for me, she made each of the characters look like they were making these decisions for themselves.
Yeah.
Which is really, really interesting. It's a very complicated way that she is able to present this character. And it's probably also due to this like excellent script and the direction as well. But she did such a phenomenal job of being the center of this, something that could have been really messy, but feels very, I guess, organized.
Well,
in the way that it pans out.
You think about the fact that, so she's got two guys after her, and when, you know, like she doesn't, like, they're both cute. They're both charming in their own way. And she can't really pick between them, which is probably why she knocks on their collective door. Yeah. And she says to them, well, you guys are going to play each other tomorrow. The winner can date me. You know, yeah. So on the one hand, like, she makes them think that they have a choice in this matter, but really she has just completely held the power of this because they could both tell her, like, forget that. Like, we're not playing this game, but at every single turn, they absolutely play her game. Right.
Yes.
Zendaya, she does so much in this movie. It was awesome to see, because there's a moment where in the trailer and in the promo material for this film, where you see her sitting, she leans back and smiles.
Yeah.
And you have no context for why that is happening in that moment. And when you learn the context, it's actually rather cool.
It's, yeah. I feel like there was like a collective like gasp in the theater. We saw it in the trailer, but to have the context around what's happening in that scene. And again, you're right. Like, just how much power she has in that moment and over both of these men throughout the film is so well done. And she does such a great job of it, because she does. It's not big. It's not showy.
No,
what she's doing, but it's still like she's holding all of us in her hand as she's doing all this, just like she's doing to these characters, because we're like all constantly looking at her face.
Yeah,
it's all like very, very small. But like really well done.
It's really trippy to watch her play Tashi at two points in her life, because we see her at the beginning when she's this, you know, 18-year-old ascendant junior tennis star. And then we keep flipping to her at this challenger when she's presumably, you know, mid-20s, late 20s. And she seems so much more put together. It's a better haircut. She's wearing nicer clothes. She's carrying herself a little taller. And, you know, it's still Zendaya. It's not like, you know, they didn't like go in and give her a complete makeover, but just in the way she carries herself, you see her as this young, cocky, like she's very brash when she's young. And then you see her older and she's just so poised and so collected. And it's just gorgeous to watch her play these two sides of herself.
Yeah. Yeah. She like in front of us grows into this, I don't know if the right word is boss this entire situation, but she is like, she's holding the reins.
Mm-hmm.
She's orchestrating things like for her own life. And it's funny because we do see her over time, and I don't have any context for it. I guess the actress, like Disney star Zendaya to movie star Zendaya.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it feels like she makes that progression really easily on screen, like from kid to adult. And it's like something I think that is really hard to do because she's so famous. Like it might be easier if you're an unknown, but everyone knows who she is, and you're able to remove the Zendaya from the Tashi of it, which is amazing.
I think, you know, when you put it that way, one of the things I'm actually looking forward to is watching her career unfold. You know, like we've seen, she can do so many things. She can, You know, she can play a superhero. She can play a drug-addled teen. She can play, you know, this much more poised and sophisticated point of this love triangle. She can do anything she wants to do. I'm really, really excited to see what kinds of movies that she chooses as her career goes forward. The one last thing I do want to talk about before we leave Tashi as a central point alone is, it's hard to phrase this, but the conversation has been that Tashi's agency in this story or Tashi's role in the story is sapped away from her at the last minute. I don't know what I think of that without getting too spoilerific,
yeah.
But I'm not sure that's necessarily true.
I agree with you. There's a line that she uses early in the movie, and it kind of, for me, echoed through some of the decisions she was making and then into the final moments of the movie. So we can talk about when we get to the spoiler part of the episode. But I agree. I don't think there's anything missing.
No. I'd be curious to see it and to read it. I may, when we're done with this, you know, cause I kind of try to keep myself in the dark from other criticism before I, you know, have conversations with people like you. But I'd be curious to dig into that, especially looking at some of the writers who I know who are women of color. Cause I think that was part of the central point. Yeah. So I may come back around to that, but looking at it, I don't see what they see, but that of course makes sense because that's not my lived reality. And then we've got Patrick. We've got Dan O'Connor, who he does some fascinating things in this movie because he's kind of the embodiment of somebody who made one bad decision in his life and it really took him down a different road. Because all three of them really should have been on the same path. Patrick and Art really should be on parallel paths of their career. They should be this kind of Roddick and Agassi type rivalry, you know, or Sampras and Agassi, Roddick and somebody else whose name is escaping me because I don't watch tennis. But there's those great tennis rivalries that have happened throughout history. And that's kind of what they should have been because they're very equally talented. They were friends, you know, you see them play against each other and they just when they're practicing, they really, really intently practice. And so that's the thing, you think that they should be on parallel paths, but because made a bad decision one day, he just kind of flails out and he's on a whole different circuit than Patrick is. And maybe it's also because he doesn't have Tashi steering his career. What did we think of O'Connor in this movie? I think he's got an evolution.
Yeah, for me, it's interesting because Patrick, the way they talk about this character is he's extremely talented, but then kind of lazy about that talent. Whereas if we were to compare him to Art, where he may not have the talent, but he puts in the work.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's they could have been on these parallel streams, but Patrick should have this leg up. He should be in Art's position, if not further along.
Well, yeah. At one point, Art even says, "You've never beat me."
Yeah.
You know, which is here's this pro tennis player who's won major championships, but here's this one guy who he's never beat one-on-one.
Yeah, just some random guy hasn't beat. And it's interesting because it feels like such a waste. Mm-hmm. Because you see them young and on the ascent. That's the term that you use, and I really like it because they were all there. They were all maybe I'll make it pro. Maybe we'll see you guys on the circuit when we're there. It was just really hopeful.
Yeah.
And there are several time jumps in this film back and forth, which is really interesting in itself, but it's almost consistent. We see him fall a little bit further and further every time we see him, which is really, really interesting. And it builds up to this whole challenger scenario. But yeah, I think he does a really good job of he's, I don't want to use the word loser, but it's
no, yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
It's he just he lets it get away from him. And you almost want to shake him, and you get the feeling that some of the other characters, like, you almost feel that in the beginning, Art wants to shake him a little. You get the feeling that Tashi, when she meets him, she wants to shake him a little to be like, look at what you have, look at what you could have. And maybe there's a little bit of arrogance to the fact that, like, he's got the talent, so he shouldn't have to work for it. So it's like, it's an interesting dynamic that they're almost opposites, but very, very similar.
I mean, it's, you know, one of the things that sets his, that splinters his path off from Art and Tashi is there's this moment where there, you know, Tashi is in college, she's at Stanford, and Art, Patrick's in her room with her, and they're kind of getting it on, and she's talking about tennis, and he's like, are we talking about tennis? Like, while we're, you know, while in the middle of foreplay? And yeah, she's like, I'm always talking about tennis. And you kind of get the feeling that if Patrick was talking about tennis more, you know, like, listen, yeah, I know in the grand scheme of things, you need more to life than just one thing. But in that moment, when you're 21 and you're in college and your body is like at the hot peak that it's probably ever going to be,
yeah,
you should only be talking about tennis. And yeah, you kind of wonder, like, if he had just kept talking about tennis, would he have, would that moment not have happened? You know, would he have stayed on the same path? Would he be the one that she's coaching instead of her throwing in her lot with Art? You know, it's wild to think that it wasn't even a decision about his career. It's not like he decided, like, not to play in a tournament or to switch coaches or something like that. But just one moment where he wasn't thinking about tennis really affected the way that tennis would be a part of his life.
Yeah. And you can tell that it's important to him. There's, I guess, at the beginning, when we're talking about, I think it's the first time the three of them are together on that beach. And they're talking about the fact that Tashi is going to go to college. And she's like, I need to have more than just tennis. Like, I need to be able to do more than hit a ball with a racket.
Yeah.
And his response to that is like, well, that's lame. Go pro. It's wild because, like, at that point, it's almost like a flip where he's like fully, I'm going to go pro. Tennis is it.
Yeah.
And Art and Tashi have this backup plan with college. But then tennis kind of like almost switches sides in terms of how important it is to all of these people once they're in college. And like, it's all she wants to talk about. So it's like an interesting, really interesting dynamic in that maybe he's downplaying how important tennis is to him because it ends up being like his whole life.
Again, for something, for a movie that's not actually a sports movie, it's very much a sports movie. And yeah, like, you know, that decision, like that's kind of Tashi's fork in the road is if she had gone pro instead of going to Stanford, her career might have been very, very different. You know, the money that she earned, the kind of opportunities that she had may have been very, very different because she would have been on a pro tour at that time and certainly like playing a different game. So her body wouldn't have responded the way her body did. But at the same time, it's like, it may have just been a ticking thing anyway. You know, it's kind of a fluke. It's the thing that she's done thousands of times. And just one time she does this thing and her body doesn't respond. But if she wasn't on that court at that moment, making that move, it may never have happened. So it's wild that, like, you know, for all three of them, how they have approached their career has this major impact on what they get, you know, like 5 or 6 years down the road. And you mentioned it, the movie does flip back and forth in time. And I felt like it actually did a really good job of, aside from the fact that it's got a title card, you know, quite often, it does a very elegant job of always letting you know where we are on the trajectory of these three people.
Yeah. And I appreciated that because it kept it interesting. And because the time shifts were so dynamic, like you weren't sure when we're going to go back and forth in this story, it kept the tension the whole time because of the fact we were like, oh, wait, when did this happen? Like, who's together now? What? Like, what's happening?
What are they talking about? Why are they mentioning Austin? What happened there?
You might like hear about that later. And it's like, it's interesting. It keeps you on your toes a little bit. And like, I know that tennis is about footwork. This is so full of puns.
I know. thing, we're setting like, a record.
The back and forth is also like people watching tennis. Like your neck is like this side of the court, that side of the court. And that's what the time like back and forth in this movie feels like as well, is that like your neck is craning 13 years ago to 2 weeks ago to now. So it's really interesting in the way that the structure of the film is like a tennis match as well.
And I mean, what's beautiful about that too is, you know, you talked about how Tashi always seems to be in control. The scenes where she is in the front row of this challenger watching Art and Patrick face off, the whole crowd is doing the tennis thing of looking back and forth, but she's always looking straight on. It's that Hitchcock Strangers on a Train shot, but it's like, of course she is looking straight ahead. She's not the one like the crowd that's following the ball. She is watching it from a much different, she's playing a different game, you know?
Yeah. I was actually thinking about Tashi, and I guess the fact that she is a woman of color, and you had mentioned it, like there's been response to maybe some of the misogyny around how she's talked about outside of the film. And I think it's just the reaction of like, Tashi is the villain, like immediately when all of these characters have this like equal motivations for like what they do throughout this movie. It's not really touched on in the movie. The fact that she, like, there is a comment about racism, like somewhere in there, there's, a discussion that the two guys have around, like, I think it's Patrick who's kind of making fun of the fact that she's going to make her family millionaires. And she mentions that, like, they don't have a lot of money. She couldn't go to this, like, private training.
Right.
Like, it's almost like, and it's not an explicit thing that's mentioned in the movie, the fact that she is a woman of color. She's in this, like, in this industry. And we've seen it from, like, interviews with, like, Serena Williams, Venus Williams, like, it, and even, like, Coco Gauff, and like there's a lot of unchecked or at least non-discussed elements around things that could have impacted Tashi as a character and could be why Zendaya's playing her the way that she is, the way why she is aggressive in her pursuit of tennis. That's kind of like glossed over, and I'm not saying they needed to go into all of that detail, but it's something that I think should be a part of the consideration around why her character is so driven and, like you said, brash about her talent in the beginning, and having that backup plan where, like, some people need to plan those things more than others. And you have these two white guys who are just, Patrick is, yeah, man, I'll go pro. He comes from money. We know that. Like, they both are in this very prestigious, expensive tennis school. But yeah, it's a thing that, it's not mentioned, and I think that there's been some discourse around the fact that, like, she is a woman of color and the two other leads are white men, and that, like, is there a power dynamic there already? But I don't think it took anything away from the movie to make it, like, more or less explicit than what it was, but I understand some of the conversation that's happening around it.
That's true. There is a lot of subtext to what you're talking about, you know, the right down to, as you mentioned, the fact that, you know, they talk about being in, like, bunkmates at this private school or this tennis camp. She's like, that was not my opportunity. You know, just because that wouldn't be her opportunity. As he's thinking about what might be next for him in his career, if he, you know, can't win this last leg of the Grand Slam, Art, if he can't win the last leg of the Grand Slam, he's like, well, I'll get endorsements, or I'll go comment on, you know, tennis TV, or I'll be the, you know, commentator on ESPN or whatever. It's like, that's great for you, because, you know, you're the white male tennis player, and that opportunity is always there for you of just the greater tennis ecosystem after you retire. That's not always the ecosystem that presents itself for the women. That's certainly not the ecosystem that presents itself for the women of color. And I do remember that the screenwriter of this movie, when asked about, was there a reason why Tashi was specifically a woman of color, said, well, if we are telling a tennis story set in the time that it is, that is the kind of tennis player that is on the ascent, you know? And it's because the Serenas and the Venuses of the world have been there for a while, and it's becoming somebody who they see themselves embodied. It's the same sort of reason why this character being in this film is important, for, because, you know, representation is very important for the next generation behind.
Yeah.
you know, they will see themselves as, well, maybe I can do that. And that's what he said. The screenwriter said, well, if we're going to set a tennis story now, and we're going to have a female tennis star now, it's going to be a female star of color, because that is the landscape of professional tennis. And that comes with its own baggage. And that is something, you know, the screenwriter is a white man, so he probably shouldn't be unpacking it as far as it can. It must be unpacked.
Yeah.
You know, if this story was written and directed by Ava DuVernay, it would be a very different story. And I would love to see that story. But that's the thing, is like, he can only get into those weeds to a certain degree before he's not telling his story anymore.
For sure. Yeah. No, completely understand. And the other thing, and the umpire is Darnell Appling, who is, I believe, Zendaya's like best friend and assistant. And he's just so great. I like, there's very few side characters in this entire film.
Yeah.
And he is somebody we see very, very consistently, because we keep going back to this Challengers match over and over. And I feel like the attitude that he had was very much the vibe of the entire movie. it fit so well. I had such a good time. Like, anytime we went back, I was like, oh man, I can't wait for the way he says this. Like, it was very entertaining. And if I had a famous friend, like, that's what I want. I want like a 15-minute role that I can just eat up and be hilarious in and get out.
I mean, and what I loved about that is that could have been anybody. Like, they could have cast like any person in that role. So again, like putting a person of color into that role where you don't often see, you know, umpires of color in these tennis tours. I mean, it's not the pro tour, it's the next level down. Mm-hmm. That's what the Challenger tour is. But still, like, having that representation in this movie, it's like, it's taking that one extra step that it didn't necessarily have to take, but you know, that Zendaya was able to use her power as an actor. And I think she's a producer on this movie too. So, yeah. Same thing, like, you know, using that clout and saying, we are going to do this, is how these, you know, just the slightest little change, affects a movie like this. We're going to sound a spoiler gong right now. If you don't want to be spoiled for the end of this movie, turn back now. I think you can hear in our voice that we are both suggesting that you see this movie. So do see it. And we are going to talk about the end of Challengers right after this. Okay, so we get to this last match, and like, we get to the end of it. And first of all, the whole ending of this film, where Tashi and Patrick resume their relationship, there's a deal struck in this moment, the match seems to be going Art's way, and Patrick to really wrestle the power back away from a guy who seems to finally be getting better than him, tips off what he did. Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, elegant as hell that this,
so good,
one touch from the first act comes back in the third. You know, when we talked about Love Lies Bleeding on the last full episode of this show, we talked about Chekhov's lesbian. This, I think, was Chekhov's serve, you know. This thing that happened in the first act is going to go off in the last act, number one. And then we get to this furious back and forth between these two guys that, again, people kind of are unsure about. I think it's a great note to end a film like this on. Like, I think if this film had a clear winner and a clear loser, that we would have come away from it with a very different feeling. Yeah. But this whole finale of this love triangle, where we get, you know, Tashi yelling again, basically embodying our feelings at this moment,
was
delightfully wild.
Yeah. I this is like something I was referencing before, but like, honestly, it was the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of this movie are just so fun. It's just, you're so in the screen. There's nothing else that could distract you from this. But at the beginning, when Tashi goes to their room and suggests that, like, whoever wins the match can have my number, they ask her about, like, do you want me to win? Like, and she says something to the effect of, like, I just want to see some really good tennis. And it feels like the way she's pulled these strings leading up to that last 20 minutes where to Art, I'm going to leave you if you don't win. To Patrick, like, go easy on him. Maybe I'll be your coach, whatever. She is playing it because she doesn't know how it's going to turn out. She doesn't know if Patrick's actually going to do what she asked him to do. She gets to see some really good tennis. And, like, it's the way she's the way she yells. Mm-hmm. It's also going back to, like, how she yells in the beginning of the movie. But it's like, did she finally get that really good tennis out of Art, out of Patrick, that she was waiting for?
It's incredible tennis. Like, watching these two, like, finally be on an even footing with each other. I think, you know, we've spent the whole movie talking about them playing each other, but we've never actually really seen them play each other. So watching them go back and forth, and for this 1 minute, seemingly just like each other's equal. You know, we don't know from minute to minute which one of them has been better in their career, although it has been, you know, really told to us that Art is always, that Patrick has always been better.
Yeah.
But watching this unravel, watching the whole, like, watching the relationships begin to unravel, mm-hmm. and seeing that funneled and channeled into this one intense match, that we've been watching slowly play out through the course of the movie, like, now just throwing ourselves into this match. It's bananas. It's absolutely bananas. Basically begging his wife to stay with him. His wife is pleading with his best friend to throw the match and seals it with cheating on her husband. Like, this is all, like, this is a Swiss watch of a love triangle. Like, when I said in the intro that this was a tangled knot, this is a very tangled knot. We are not untangling this knot for, like, days. I don't care which thread you pull on. It is staying tangled for a long time in an unbelievable way.
It's almost like the heightened tension of, like, the score is just, and that's something we haven't talked about.
Oh yeah.
But the score is just so good. It's so fun. It's almost like video game in nature. I mean, the way it's been, like, just, it's been my soundtrack for going for a run, because it makes me feel, like, very energized. But it's amazing how all of these kind of bits and pieces that have been spread out through the entire film come to this, like, head, this very loud, fast, aggressive head at the end of the movie. And there's that one tennis ball POV that is insane. Like, I don't know when the director decided, like, you know what, like, let's add something else. It's not necessary, but it is necessary. You know what I mean?
We, like, go, like, they create so this great. They create this shot, like, under the court, like, we're looking up at them, like, almost like they're playing on a glass court. Mm-hmm. We're you know, we're watching them just, like, drenched in sweat. Like, when we were talking about it, it's a sexy movie. This is, like, there's, you know, they've got shirts off through the half day. You know, there's
everyone's one in great shape.
Yeah, they're in fantastic shape. They're just wearing towels at one point. it's bananas. And I mean, what's funny is, for a film that's not explicitly queer, like, there is an awful lot of homoeroticism in this movie.
Yeah, like, there's so, undertones. The stool, the churro, like, all of it. It's just like, I don't, it goes to that discussion around, like, motivations. Like, why are they doing what they're doing? Like, what do they actually want? And these are questions that are, like, explicitly asked through the entire movie, but no one actually answers them. And I think that's what adds to this tension at the end. It's like, what are they playing for? Like, this is intense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, they all have something to gain. Like, shit, Art needs to eat. You know, he's sleeping in his car because his credit card can't afford the deposit at this shitty motel. Yeah. You know, Patrick needs to figure out what he's going to do with his career, because he's feeling that it's at its end. Tashi is, you know, I feel like Tashi would be fine by herself. I feel like Tashi could just take the kid, live on her own, be a boss bitch, and everything would be great. Yeah. But, you know, she needs something. Like she, I don't know if it's companionship or she needs a project or what she needs, but like they all are doing this for their own reasons. And none of them seem to be a great player, you know, by the time we get to the end of this, which is wild, which is what makes this a great story, a great movie, a sports movie that's not a sports movie, but it's still very much a sports movie. It's bananas. We end every matinee cast with a souvenir, something tangible or intangible. If you could take away from this film and keep, you would. Ribby Dillon, we've been talking about an awful lot of different things inside of Challengers. What would be your souvenir from this movie?
Honestly, if I could walk into any place and have, times 10, that's like Tashi's theme for when she's playing tennis, just blare wherever I'm going. It's the best. I want to be hyped like that when I go anywhere. It's so great. The other thing would be honestly, the clothes. Like there's so much just like product placement in this film, but like sports is like that. You see it splashed all over like the sides of the court. It's on like the Uniqlo fit that they're all wearing.
Yeah.
Everything is branded and like really expensive. So if I could take that stuff away, like excellent. But honestly, the key thing for me is this score and just to have it just interspersed throughout my day, just on top of people talking, heightening the tension, making people confused about, is this a tense moment? Like, it's just so fun. It was like, I think the thing that I'm taking away and talking about the most out of this film.
At work, it's funny, at work the other day, I did ask the team if you could have like a wrestling theme song anytime you walk into a room, what would you choose? So thank you for answering my work question. That's amazing. Mine, I mean, it's great that you mentioned the clothes in this movie, because what I want, I can actually have, because I do believe it is available online now. There's a t-shirt that kind of makes the rounds that says, I told ya. And it's, again, it's just this very subtle, cheeky nod to things that are going on in the movie. And it's, you see, you definitely see Art wearing it and you see Tashi wearing it. You don't know whose it actually is.
True.
You know, because it seems to fit them both properly. But I just kind of love that here's this shirt that they both wear. I want that shirt and I can have that shirt. I may actually buy that t-shirt.
Quite expensive.
Is it really?
It's because it's J.W. Anderson who designed all the clothes for the movie, I believe. Please check me if I'm wrong. But it's like, it's several hundred dollars, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, okay, so let's get real here. First of all, one can buy it on Etsy for $36. But you're right. Holy shit, that's a $400 t-shirt.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Oh my dear. I've got suits that aren't even $400. No. Okay. If I get that t-shirt, you can tell me, you can ask me where on Etsy did I get it? Because I'm not paying $400 for a t-shirt. Thank you for rating on my parade, Miss Dillon.
Sorry.
We rate here on the Matinee Cast on a scale of 1 to 4 stars. You could probably hear the enthusiasm in our voices. Ruby, what do you give Challengers?
Oh, it's a 4. It's just such a blast.
I am on a 3.5. I love the holy shit out of this movie. Just wanted it just a little bit shorter. I say that because I saw a 10:30 PM show. You know, I wanted to be home before 1. That's all I'm saying. But well worth your time. Like, really great movie. Really great, 2024 movie. If you've been waiting for like good movies out of this year, this is a really good place to start. There's been plenty of good movies out of this year, so you can't really go wrong. We're gonna do a truncated other side to finish off this episode. Films that you could watch as a companion piece to Challengers. Where did your mind go? Where did you think that people could go on to if they were really smitten with Challengers and wanted another album?
Yeah. So this is interesting because I learned that the screenwriter of this film, Justin Kritsky, is married to Celine Song, who wrote and directed Past Lives, which also features somewhat of a love triangle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I've seen so many jokes around, who's the third in the relationship? And when is their movie coming out? So I feel like it's a really interesting companion piece, and that these like this very talented, extremely talented couple has put out these two just banger movies
yeah, yeah.
over the course of like 2 years. So I think that's one that would be really interesting to watch in companion to this, and maybe try to figure out like who's the third.
Yeah, no kidding. I did republish our Past Lives episode just a few weeks ago while I was on vacation in my favorite things package for little postcards while I was gone, because that was my favorite film from last year. And I kind of feel like now, you know, after it got Oscar nominations and, you know, made its way on demand, I feel like now people are finally catching up with it. So even though we talked about it on this show last June, I put it back out into the world just a few weeks ago in the hopes that people are catching up with Past Lives. I love that movie to death. It is another love triangle movie, because you've got this like old flame who comes back. The married couple, you know, the husband and the married couple, Arthur is the character's name. He's much more passive than either Art or Patrick are, but it's still, it's still so fascinating to watch. So they would make a great pairing. I love when you get like married screenwriters or married directors. Like I always love the pairing of, Her by Spike Jonze and Lost in Translation by Sofia Coppola, because it's kind of
two sides of the same coin.
And it's really wild to see that. That's a good one for sure. My first suggestion, an incredible film that launched a few different careers. I'd go back to 2000, I believe, or 2001, it might even be, to Y Tu Mama Tambien. Alfonso Cuarón, back before he was doing things like Gravity, before he was doing Roma, before he was doing a Harry Potter movie. This really stunning road movie with these three people headed off down the road, Luisa, Julio, and Tanak. Again, you know, like just, you know, again, like they're both kind of interested in the same woman. She's very much in control of the situation. Yeah. A movie that has aged incredibly well. Luna and Gael Garcia Bernal have gone on to have these incredible careers. I feel like I lost track of Maribel Verdú. She's probably been doing things that I just don't remember. She was in Pan's Labyrinth. I don't know who she was in that, but that makes sense. And she has been in some other stuff like Lucky Star, Abracadabra. Oh my goodness, she was the mom in The Flash. Wow. Okay. So that shows you how much I remember The Flash. But anyway, three incredibly talented people. Cuarón, it's a fantastic movie that I feel like if people have never seen it, I feel like everybody who's listening to this show has probably seen it. But if you've never seen it, make it a priority. It's a great movie, really great road movie, really great coming of age movie. Did you have any others that you thought would make a good companion film with?
I was actually thinking about Dune 2, which I think the entire world has seen by now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's that whole Zendaya, the actor, the movie star that is like, I don't watch Euphoria. I didn't watch Disney Channel when she was on it. The red carpet was essentially my introduction to her and how amazing her and La Roche are working together. It's like, it's almost like this is where she's more than just the press tour. Like her character in that movie has a more significant role. She's pretty much the heart of that film, the same way she is the heart and center of Challengers. So it's interesting to see she's playing very completely different people and characters in these movies. They're completely different settings. There's a bit of a love triangle-y thing that you get at the end of Dune 2 as well. But it's just, I guess, for her growth. And like, I think she's here. Like she's a movie star, an international movie star. And I, like you said before, I'm just like excited to see where she goes after this.
I've not been crazy about Dune at all. I'm that guy. But I saw Dune and I saw Dune 2. And every time she is in the scene, she's doing great things, whether she's, you know, doing them on her own or she's doing them opposite Chalamet. You're right. There's this very, like, that's a kind of a vicious love triangle that has to happen in that movie. There's a movie where she gets robbed of agency. like watching her, seeing her go through like all of, like trying on all of these suits that she does. With, even if it's like, you know, like I'm remembering now that she was in The Greatest Showman. you know, and her, yeah, her role in that. So it's fantastic to see this on the ascent, you know, like she is so incredibly young and doing all of these amazing things with her career. It's fantastic to see. You know, not a huge fan of Dune 2, but like there's things about it I like, including Zendaya. So I am happy. It's wild to have her like having this moment with both of these movies in theaters about the same time. Well, my other side, my other side, when I talked earlier on about how this is a sexy movie without a lot of sex, the paramount for that for me, because it's one of my all-time favorite movies, and I believe we even did an episode about it once upon a time, so check the show notes because there may be an episode if you can go back and listen to. But I went back to Out of Sight, 1998. George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez.
It's one of my favorite movies, man.
It's so good. Sexy movie without, like, you know, there's one sexy,
I've never seen better chemistry than George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez in that movie.
Absolutely. You know, it's just, they only really have three scenes together. They make two of them absolutely count, and then the last one is just where everything comes to a head. Mm-hmm. Love the hell out of that movie. It makes Miami look so good. It makes Detroit look so good. They are both like kind of like peak stardom, like it's actually kind of wild because you're watching Jennifer Lopez before she would become J-Lo, which is wild to think about. Clooney is kind of like fresh off of ER, and yeah, it's just so good. It looks, everything about it is just so damn cool. It's so funny. Don Cheadle comes in and out and just makes everything worse every time he's in it.
Cameos, there's so many famous people in the movie, and you're just pleased to see everyone.
Yeah. It very much like Challengers, it's a sexy movie without a lot of sex. And like, it's usually when somebody asks me like, what is the sexiest movie ever, that's usually my answer.
That I agree. I completely agree with you. And like everything that you've said, I've recommended it to so many people.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's that like you have to be in a certain mindset to like go into it and like really enjoy it, because like you said, it's like there's not a lot of interaction between these two characters.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like you could throw that on for anybody. It's got a heist. It's so funny.
I think it's just like expectations when you have like,
well, maybe, yeah,
like, really hot people.
I think like we might be overselling it to anybody who may not have seen it by now. But I think that would make a great companion. I mean, like, I would totally go see the Out of Sight Challengers double feature. I would pay
100%. You know, big money to see that. What I want to do now. That's the double feature.
Make it happen. Like, you know, like your next like milestone birthday, like rent out a theater, bring all your friends and be like, we're watching these two movies.
I feel like in the spirit of Challengers, what you'd want to do instead is like go to an almost empty theater of Challengers and sit right next to like a couple and just like make it really weird.
I love this. I love this idea. There we go. That is episode 325 of the Matinee Cast. I am so very thankful that Ruby was able to come back and have so much fun with me talking about Challengers. Come on back on Monday, May 20th for episode 326. I think we are going to talk about I Saw the TV Glow, the new film from Jane Schoenbrunn, the director of Everybody's Going to the World's Fair. I've heard interesting things about this, and I think we're going to talk about it on the next show. Ruby, anything you want to plug? If people want to follow you, Letterboxd, Twitter, anything like that?
I'm really offline these days. Just Twitter, at Ruby D, RoboByDee. You'll just see me stan various things for now.
People follow her there, and any of Ruby's friends who love listening to the podcast and how professional it sounds, hi to all of y'all, and happy to have the listenership bump. I always look forward to the Ruby bump in my listenership. My site is thematinee.ca for more audio content. You can find back episodes there. You can also find them in all the usual places, Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it. Everything gives you handy ways to subscribe for free and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on Challengers can be left in the comment section of the site. You can email me, ryan@thematinee.ca. I'm still on Twitter, sorta, where I'm matinee_ca, and there's always Facebook, facebook.com/darkmatinee. Ruby, any final thoughts?
No, I just really, it's just such a fun movie. Just go see it.
I want to see some great tennis. For Ruby, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the matinee.